Oh, yeah, time for Truth About Markets on Residence 104.4. Max and Stacy.
Max Kaiser. We're walking along the street in Paris, recording our show once again so that the people of London can hear the streets of Paris.
Yeah, they need to hear what's happening in continental Europe now that the war is heating up. You know, basically, there was a currency wars going on for decades after the abandonment of the gold standard, the gold window in 1971. And then the war ended basically in 2007, and now we've been trying to figure out who will pay the reparations. So now this is a funny situation because the reparations are comprised of maybe, let's call it $100 trillion worth of off-balance sheet debt, and using modern warfare techniques, financial warfare techniques like credit default swaps, you're able to move $100 trillion around the global system seamlessly, costlessly, and but it has to land somewhere at some point. And since there's no growth, and since austerity measures are kicking in, and the people are uprising, now we see that the battle lines are drawn. You've got the UK, and David Cameron is upset with Germany. France is upset with Germany. Everyone's upset with Germany because Germany, of course, they don't want the $100 trillion debt to land, the reparations to land in their laps, which would mean that they would open up the European Central Bank credit facility and lending facility. They're not going to do that. They don't want to do that. The U.S. doesn't want to do it. They'd rather have Europe do it. So now it's going to be interesting to see who will pay the reparations for the currency war that ended in 2007.
Yeah, and it's getting pretty bleak. I see, so S&P this week, of course, threatened to downgrade 15 Eurozone nations, including Germany, which, I mean, only a few months ago, it was the case that Germany had the best performing bond in the world, even better. The yields were lower than even in the U.S. Let's walk through the park so it's quieter. But so, and I see that a lot of politicians now, several politicians anyway in Germany, are now saying, oh, it's a conspiracy theory by the U.S. to destabilize the Eurozone.
Well, yeah, it's definitely part of the war. I don't know if you could call it a conspiracy theory. I mean, it's, if you're in part of a war and the other side's shooting, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's a part of the war. And S&P is a U.S.-based group, and of course they're going to be participating in the war. They don't want to have to pay these reparations. And so it's definitely heating up. Clearly something I called a couple, let's say a year ago, I said that Germany was going to emerge as a kind of a big antagonist in all of this. And at the time, people were saying, how dare you reignite those old German and global, you know, saber rattling? How dare you do that? But now just about every pundit in the world is agreeing with me.
Yeah, so we're going to have to find a new one to push. And that, of course, is another thing that we were very early on, really early on, is pointing out the role of London as the heart of global fraud and Ponzi schemes and defrauding and stealing and looting the wealth of peoples and nations around the world. And we noted that in the AIG case when they wrote $2.7 trillion in credit default swaps that they had no hope of ever paying off. Remember, these are the so-called hedges that all these bankers and hedge funds say means that they're perfectly hedged. It's netted out. There's no risk when you look at the $600 trillion in derivatives out there. It's all netted out, right? Well, anyway, now it turns out that it's looking like the MF Global fraud, of course, happened via London. Now, we're going to talk about that next week, but I wanted to just mention that, you know, at this point.
Yeah, AIG, Lehman, and MF Global.
And Madoff.
Madoff all ran through London because of the lax regulatory environment in London. And Cameron won't close that loophole because he needs the support of the bankers to keep him in office. And this is why we hate Cameron so much, because he says all the looters are bad, but he's in power because of these major league looters. He won't close the loophole that keeps these major league looters in business. And the thing about MF Global is that now it looks as though after the creditors get through with them, the people who are out money right now won't get anything back, it appears.
Well, yeah, but that's because the courts are ruling that JP Morgan, which took a lot of the MF Global customer funds, it looks like quite a bit of it was transferred to JP Morgan, who MF Global owed money to. So that's where that's gone. And they're saying this is a legitimate creditor and therefore you can't take this money back. But I wanted to also note that the Cameron, of course, can't shut these operations down because I believe it's, more the shadow government, shadow banking system that is his boss, essentially. And you can see, like, for example, has any U.S. intelligence agency or whatever targeted any London offshore, any U.K. offshore havens, tax havens? No, they don't, because they're shutting all the other ones down but the British ones, because that's where they funneled all of it, all of the wealth through. That's the way that this scheme is operating.
Yeah, that's right. And, you got MF Global, of course, is with JP Morgan. We make the point that these exchange-traded funds are also a risk. You know, I noticed that the gold exchange-traded fund, GLD, has 2,300 tons of gold in there now. But none of those people are going to see their gold, because if they ever try to get it out, the bank will claim that they've got a credit, they've got superior claim, and you won't get anything. It's too bad.
Yeah, because look at the case of MF Global. These are real, genuine, segregated accounts of customer cash deposits at a brokerage. This is a sacrosanct rule of brokeraging. So the fact that those people and people with money up to $50 million have just vanished. Like, if those people who are the top 1%, the top 0.5%, aren't able to defend themselves against the likes of JP Morgan and the other people around JP Morgan, what chance does any person with a piece of paper or a digital paper saying that they own the share of GLD?
Not much, not any, really. So it's a shame. Now, also, did we cover yet that Eric Sprott up in Canada, he's, the silver vigilante, gold vigilante, mostly silver. He's really going to start waging a campaign trying to get the silver producers to take physical delivery of their silver. And so that's part of the currency war, Stacy, is the silver vigilantes are trying to get active. And so far, the paper markets have swamped the physical markets, just like the paper markets swamped the sovereign markets in Europe. Every time Greece put together a bailout package, Wall Street put together a credit default swap 10 times bigger. And so to kill the Greece sovereignty, similarly with gold and silver, for every, ton of silver that's bought, there's 10 tons of naked short selling going on to keep the price, artificially cheap. So this is part of the war, paper versus stuff.
Yeah, and I was reading on Zero Hedge this morning something that alluded to a thing we always talk about, which is peak everything, peak water, peak oil, peak oxygen, whatever, peak clean air. And a lot of people think, oh, it's all conspiracy and blah, 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 blah. But they ask, why was it that Cassano at AIG in London had to write $2.7 trillion in derivatives on this little microscopic pile of stuff that existed? And, of course, it's because the world is finite. There are only so many resources. There's just only so many things you can dig up. And so they have to collateralize it over and over and over in order to generate any cash flow for themselves.
Well, the word of the week is rehypothecation.
Oh, yes.
So to hypothecate means basically to use as collateral value. And to rehypothecate means to reuse the same thing as collateral value for something else. And this is part of the MF Global scam. What they're saying is that there's a regulatory loophole in London that allows for rehypothecation of sovereign debt. So infinitely re-lending the same debt over and over again is okay in London. So MF Global was able to leverage itself up by many trillions of dollars, and by rehypothecating the exact same collateral an infinite number of times. You know, if you go to the vending machine sometimes, and you put your money into the vending machine, and for some reason it just keeps popping out, you know, soda. It's broken. It keeps popping out soda. You put in only one coin, but it keeps popping out hundreds and hundreds of dozens of cans of soda. Well, this is the whole scam, is that basically you put up very little in terms of collateral, and then the system is broken, so it keeps popping out billions and billions of loans collateralized by the exact same initial minimal type of commitment. But instead of fixing the system, they're using that as the basis for their economy, saying, look, this economy is growing. See, it keeps spitting out the same loan over and over again. And we're all, us that are here at the center of this, are all making tons of money. So it must be good, right?
Well, you know, that rehypothecation, apparently in America, the regulations are such that you're only allowed to rehypothecate by something like 40%. So you can't leverage up that much there in America, according to the regulations. So they do it in London, where you could do it. There's no cap at all. You can sell the same loan over and over and over and over and over and over again. It doesn't matter how many times. This helps with their propaganda war, of course, because what happens in the people who enable a lot of these crimes are the population itself in America. And the likes of Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein, who are able to get away with saying, oh, we're overregulated, and that's why we have to commit these crimes. I think they prefer it that way. They prefer those are their mafia techniques of banning anybody, barring anybody from competing with them in the U.S. They know that you can't leverage yourself up a trillion to one in the U.S., but you can do it in London, and only they could operate there.
Yeah, well, you have a broken system in London that spawns all kinds of horrid economic dislocation and these austerity measures and riots that are Cameron's legacy. And the U.S. is envious of that. They see the riots on the street, and they're envious. They want riots on the street, and by golly, they'll get them.
Well, so there's that. What else is happening these days? It's been a very turbulent time. Oh, speaking of turbulent, I see your friend Alec Baldwin was in the news, causing quite a bit of a ruckus on American Airlines flight from LA to New York, and he was kicked off the flight, and this became instant news. It was so weird, because I happened to see his tweet as he tweeted it, that he was being kicked off. Other passengers on the plane started tweeting it, and straight away, like, dozens and dozens of people the people I follow on Twitter, they started tweeting about it. And then I looked over at the NewYorkPost.com, and they were already had it on the front page that Alec Baldwin being kicked off the flight now.
Yeah, this is interesting, because American Airlines is in bankruptcy. Twitter's about to go public, and it was too much for Twitter, so they suspended his account with a half a million followers. And I think that this is another form of censoring, isn't it? If somebody makes a comment that's in any way not favorable to a company, in this case American Airlines or by proxy Twitter, then they're just shut down. This is similar to the WikiLeaks situation, where Julian Assange was shut out by PayPal and his other vendors because the corporations didn't like what he had to say.
My first instinct, let's go get a cup of coffee over here. My first instinct was that Zynga would love it, because the reason why he was kicked off the plane was he was playing one of their games. And, you know, are they in the quiet period now, right? They're supposed to go public in a few days. Du café noisette? Right. So, you know, here we are once again in a cafe with Paris Parisian drivers outside beeping. It's the, I've never known a population, Max, have you, to beep so much?
Well, they're very aggressive drivers because behind the wheel, you know, they vent their frustration at being penned in socialists who are the puppets of the state. But when they're behind the wheel, they're suddenly, we have to get somewhere, as if getting somewhere sooner is going to mean somehow benefit to them. Of course, you can't. It's foolish. But anyway, they're children behind the wheel. And they just honk all day long like a two-year-old, you know, crapping its diaper.
So now let's talk about the Zynga thing, because, you know, they're supposed to be doing an IPO soon.
Yeah. So $10 billion.
I see that it was valued at $10 billion. They said down from $14 billion that many had hoped for. But now,
talk about the rehypothecation scandal. I mean, there's Zynga, which is rehypothecating the same 20 customers that, you know, less than 1% of the customers actually pay for that service. But somehow that's a $10 to $14 billion company. So that's rehypothecation in the virtual world. But for 6 months, it'll be viewed as the reason why some few billion should be extracted from the overall economy.
Okay, well, we're going to sit here and enjoy our coffee, take a little break now. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's like similar to that Groupon. You know, Groupon now, after that fraudulent IPO, they just were found out to be hacking emails and committing more layers of fraud.
Yes. Oh, that was an interesting story, which we're covering on Tuesday's episode of the Kaiser Report, which is that there's a federal lawsuit against Groupon for hacking into somebody's email.
Yeah.
And a small business owner's email account and changing the contract. So this is also, I think, an example of what happens in the trickle-down fraud, when the fraud at the top goes unpunished and the whole society is corrupt. We know Rupert Murdoch walks around hacking phones, tapping the Queen's phone, tapping ministers' phone. He apparently hacked into the computer system of the whole ministry dealing with Northern Ireland, hacked into dead girls' phones and thwarted the investigation. There's no sort of indication at all that he's ever going to get in trouble for that. The justice will ever be delivered in that case. He paid some blood money to the families of the murdered children, but, you know, because he gets away with it, then everybody else thinks, well, that's the way to get ahead. That's the way to become a Lord Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah. Well, again, Cameron is just, he is to sleaze. Similar to like Obama. You thought that Blair was bad, and then Obama came around and he was worse. Bush. Same thing with Blair. You thought Blair was bad, but Cameron is much worse, you know, because he's that slippery suppository salesman that he's really disgusting, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's the whole thing with, the founding fathers of America did say that democracy was really quite a bad idea because it was basically the 51% against the 49%, just taking away the 49%'s right. But even that is kind of losing any sort of potency. People no longer even believe in that charade, where that you see that no matter who you vote for, no matter who is put in power, they're essentially the same and essentially disgusting.
Yeah, well, you know, go back to the robber barons back in the U.S. They totally destroyed the country, and then they had the trust busters come in, I guess Teddy Roosevelt, and that's what's required. I mean, you need to break up all these monopolies and trusts because it's just become this untenable oligopoly.
Well, with Teddy Roosevelt, he was a Republican and he was wealthy and he was a war hero. So was that, is that something, like you would need a billionaire who is a war hero? I mean, do you need that sort of stuff to overcome the press propaganda, or do you just need a guy who, or a woman who believes in him or herself and her principles?
Yeah, I guess you need the benevolent billionaire to come in, because otherwise anyone else is just going to either be you know, discredited in some way or assassinated.
They're painted as a class war, if it's that.
Yeah, this class war thing is, you know, it's funny about Fox News. They figured out that people who watch Fox News actually are less informed than people who watch no news at all, which I thought was interesting. Mm. And then Fox News, you know, to give you an idea of this, they were recovering the protests in Moscow recently, and they played tape from the Athens riots with palm trees waving. You know, it's just propaganda has gone so crazy.
Yeah, it is pretty over. It is pretty over the top. But you know, the problem is, of course, with any sort of cult like that, and cognitive dissonance is the more you show them. Like, if you tell a Fox News and you show the footage of the actual Fox News clip where they were pretending these massive protests in Moscow, they allege it was massive and violent, by showing Athens footage. If you show them the actual footage that they obviously manipulated that, or they manipulated the footage around Ron Paul, it'll only make them embrace Fox News even harder and more fervently. So, I mean, you can't. It's at that point where you can't even try to awaken them, because by trying to do that, it actually empowers Fox News and Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, it's like the Salem witch trials or something. Everything points to the proof that these girls are witches, and that's why we need to kill them. It's complete abandonment of any acknowledgement of anyone having any kind of brain in their head whatsoever.
Well, that's that. And, of course, it was here in the U.K., which spawned the power of Rupert Murdoch. I mean, obviously, he's from Australia, and he was gifted his father's media empire. But it was in the U.K., and with the help of Margaret Thatcher, that he really started to get... Basically, he was able to go beyond the law and just trample on all sorts of rights of individual, normal human beings.
At least Robert Maxwell had the decency to kill himself. Remember, he took his yacht out to the middle of the ocean and just drowned himself, and you got to hand it to him. He's a stand-up kind of guy. In Murdoch, he would never have the self-respect needed to top himself the way Robert Maxwell did.
No. But then again, Robert Maxwell was a pretend aristocrat. He pretended he was part of the Maxwell clan, but he wasn't. And Rupert Murdoch doesn't even need the titles, because he knows he controls whatever. You know, a really a really interesting series to watch, by the way, to understand the global mafia system we have, is to watch Boardwalk Empire. It really shows you how these power systems were maintained, and it's always very bloody and violent. But the methods are very similar to today in terms of and the systems, how control is created and how corrupt the entire system that used to be very corrupt on a local level in America, and it's just become so federalized now and globalized.
Well, through the banking system and through the ability to print money. You know, basically that's all they, you know, if you have the ability to print money, counterfeiting money. I mean, it's great. It's the dream of every power-mad psychopath, is to be able to print unlimited amount of money, which is what we have going on right now.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, is what you saw happen in the 20s in America is that there was always some young guy coming up ready to, and more, well, hungry to take over your territory. And they would do some small deal that helped them befriend such and such a person, another gangster, and they would end up taking over your territory eventually. Now, the way we have it now is you have these global war on terror, global war on drugs, global war this, global war that, and all sorts of regulations. So as we covered last week in the Kaiser Report, MF Global transferred $200 million of customer funds to an account at JP Morgan in London. Now, the stories in the financial press say it's unclear whether J.P. Morgan ever ascertained where they got this money. So those sort of people are allowed to move their money, and money is power in this system. They can move their money, no questions asked. They have different channels, different, you know, it's like Hawala for them. But every single other person, like, it's almost impossible. It's becoming more and more impossible to even exist. Look at what happened to Julian Assange, as you mentioned. Like, you can't even, you can be just totally cut off the grid.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. And you have the shadow banking system and the dark exchanges where you can move billions completely out of view of any regulation at all. So, and since the whole point of war is to increase your treasure, you know, you don't need to actually have a shooting war to increase your treasure. You just get used to exactly what's going on. People are taking over all the treasure of Greece, of Italy, Spain, Ireland, in a financial war. They're still getting all the treasure. They didn't have to kill anybody. But now the casualties are going to happen through austerity, and people are just going to starve to death.
Yeah, and they also, I mean, the other thing we've touched on in the Kaiser Report recently was that they... If you look since the beginning of this brutal financial assault that's been happening since 2007, every single major announcement and global upset in the markets happens on a weekend. And that's when any day trader or any normal human being with a little account, a couple $1,000s at a Merrill Lynch account, a brokerage, you can't call them until Monday morning. They, however, the big guys, are getting out on the weekend while it's happening. In fact, they've been tipped off. They already know. They're, in fact, short. But, you know, all this stuff happens on the weekends when you're at a total disadvantage. That's when you, the normal person, are at your weakest.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be people, the middle class, fought to have the weekend, you know, they were working 7 days a week. And then they fought, and they finally got the weekend created. 2 days off per week. But now, you know, it's almost like you don't want the weekend anymore because that's when you're going to be re-enslaved back to working slave labor again because of everything that's happening on the weekend without your oversight.
That's why I saw Mark Falber was asked on Bloomberg, what would he rather own? Would he rather, so is he, do you own dollars, Mark Falber, instead of euros? And he just laughed hysterically and said, there's one word I have for you, one stock symbol I have for you, G-O-L-D. That's what you should buy.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, if only paper money you want to have around is money you're willing to lose.
Willing to have stolen.
Yeah, it'll just be taken from your account more and more. You know, the patriotic fervor is being rallied, so people are... Will be sacrifice their bank accounts for the patriotic war between World War III, you know, it's currency war. I'm just fascinated with this whole German situation because while America was out blowing trillions fighting nobodies in caves in the middle of Nowhereville, you know, they let Germany reunify. There's a great story on Bloomberg today that Mitterrand and Thatcher feared, the reunification of Germany, is that come to pass. You know, this is a global superpower that has a kind of a checkered history.
Yeah, I know. And again, that's the third conspiracy theory people say exists. But remember, was it WikiLeaks? And when they first came onto the scene, remember a few years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, some documents were released, some notes or minutes from a meeting that Reagan and Thatcher and Mitterrand actually tried to stop the reunification of Germany. They were trying to get Gorbachev to keep East Germany in their fold.
Right, of course, because of the track record of Germany in being an imperial conquistadoro. So now the genie's out of the bottle, reunified, and they are totally taking over for this crisis in terms of they're going to have all the countries outside of Germany are going to be facing huge problems. And so it works out, you know, this is so predictable.
I think it was more along the lines of, you know, the U.S. and its satellite, the U.K., or they're part of the same empire, right? And that's what happened, you know, as the U.K. was losing the power and the empire. They, in early teens, in the 1900s, they... because Germany was rising rapidly, they were becoming their big industrial power, and basically the UK got involved with World War I and halted the rise of Germany.
I mean, everyone's, you know, they have alliances shift during a war, and then, you know, what alliances today break up, and then they're on different sides of the war, you know, tomorrow. So you know, to say that the U.S. is, or the Germany is somewhat aligned with the U.S., yeah, until they're not. And then Germany has the biggest export model in the world, and the U.S. is in terrible shape, then no, I don't. Look, I mean, as far as Germany goes, let me make it clear, I'm ambivalent about it. I don't have an opinion one way or another, whether it's good or bad, as Germany becomes this superpower of the globe. I'm not saying it's good or bad. Just saying, this is what I predicted, and this is what's happening.
That's right. And what do you predict for the UK?
Well, the UK is ill-equipped to fight a currency war. They have debt to GDP ratio of 1,000%. It's the worst in the world. The banks themselves have 400% of the country's GDP in debt. So they clearly have the worst hand, worse than the U.S., worse than any country. So, and their political situation with the coalition is very unstable. And the Olympics will do to the UK economy what it did to the Greek economy. Just one big white elephant, one big sinkhole of a disaster in terms of they can't afford it.
And how about North Sea oil?
What about it?
And North Sea oil is also rapidly declining. That has been providing the liquidity to the British economy for the past 35 years.
Yeah, plus Scotland, you know, they really believe that they're going to become independent. So they're the majority leaseholder on that oil. So they really believe they're going to be independent. And you could see a breakup of the UK.
I saw some sort of story where they were saying the Scots want to be with their independent nation. They want to ally themselves with northern European, Scandinavian countries. They don't want to be like the UK and like England. And they want to set up their whole economy and infrastructure more similar to Scandinavia.
Why not? It's the, you know, it's the model that works. It's the best model out there. It's so why would you want to go for the best instead of emulating the worst?
Yeah. Well, yeah, their temperaments are more similar to the hardworking Scandinavians who keep quiet about all their achievements and therefore get to keep them.
No, they're Lutherans, aren't they? They're, they're Protestant.
Presbyterians,
Lutherans. You know, this is not the Church of England, kind of a fake made-up church by a king who wanted to shtup his mistress.
Okay, well, I guess we should get the bill here, and then we should mosey on over across the street and record our Kaiser report, actually. But hasn't this been fun for you? We're going to take a little break right now, and we'll be right back. Okay, now that wasn't so bad, was it? We're back. We're on our journey back, so we're going to retrace our steps. Let's see. It's a little bit later in the afternoon, so the French drivers might not be so angry and so beepy. Yeah, so they might, if they're drunk, then they might not be so aggressive.
Yeah, they're you know, had three or four pastis, and hey, I read this interesting story about foie gras.
Oh, do tell us, Max. What did you learn about foie gras?
Well, you know, people it's a very controversial because the force feeding of the ducks and the geese, and they make their liver five or six or 10 times normal size, and then they harvest those livers and they eat the livers and this. Is it cruel? Is it cruel to the animal, et cetera? So they did a study where they prepared the foie gras. They prepared the foie. They fried it up after they took it from the bird. And in some cases, the fat was retained and the taste was good. And in other cases, the fat drained off quickly and didn't taste good at all. And they went back and they discovered that in the cases where the fat was retained and the taste was good, were the birds that were treated better. And they were gently given the force feeding of the grain. And the birds that was more forceful and more like an industrial scale, where there was more cruelty or pain, the fat quickly burned off and it didn't taste as good. And this kind of reminded me of the American model, because in America, the people are obese. They're being force-fed gradually all of this junk to harvest their pension accounts, to feed off the rapacious bankers. But it's done in a way that, you know, it's just under the pain threshold. It's just under the cruelty. They're being force-fed and they're being destroyed by the corporations, but just under the that level that would that otherwise would cut into the return of the corporations. So they've got it just set perfectly to get the maximum degradation from these fat American slobs.
Are you saying that they would taste very good based on the theory of the foie gras?
I think families are going to put up their kids more and more to be harvested for their livers to be sold as American human foie gras. I'd taste it.
Well, you know, it actually, the story that you just told, and I just heard it for the first time there, let's cross over here, is that it reminded me of what sort of food most people in America eat. And it's very, very cheap food that is cheap because they're force-fed animals, but very abused and in a very painful process. I mean, all their chickens are littered with tumors. Their cows, their cattle, all of it has to be injected with all sorts of antibiotics because they feed it the corn, which rips apart their stomach, which causes an infection, blah, blah, blah. But they're eating the fat products, and I've seen studies on this, the actual fat of American beef is bad for you. Now, beef from a more typical European or, you know, a cow that's able to run around in the field and eat grass and live like a normal cow,
yeah,
that fat is actually good for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, again, it's propaganda, isn't it? Because the U.S. will do a public outcry. Oh, the foie gras is horrible for the chickens and the for the geese and the ducks. And yet the conditions of the chickens and the beef that goes into the McNugget and the various other fast food products is absolutely, you know, quite dreadful. But they don't do anything about this at all. They don't even recognize it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they say, you're not allowed to sell foie gras in many places in America because of the cruelty to animals, and yet they don't seem to have a problem with eating chicken or pork or beef in the U.S.
Yeah, I love that image. I remember from a big storm in North Carolina a few years ago that they over-flooded the slurry,
yeah,
where the pigs collect their feces, and it created this river that flowed through a cemetery of pig slurry, which added these coffins that were popping open with corpses into the pig poop as it was running through the center of town. It sounded like a good metaphor for America.
American business model, for sure. And of course, who ended up cleaning up those costs? I'm sure it wasn't the company. They probably paid a fraction of the costs, and then the townspeople whose homes were washed away. And I remember the poo came up to like the rooftops of some homes. They just were buried in pig poop.
Yeah, a lot of Americans actually enjoy that kind of thing. So,
do you, Max? You're an American.
No, I'm German.
You're German and Scottish. Well, listen, as far as we know today, the Eurozone is still here. It's operating. But in case you missed the Kaiser report today, this morning, actually go there and check it online. What has happened with the UK is that you have the highest debt in the world. Little did I know that. Oh, we want to go this way. That it's even higher than Japan. If you factor in total debt, which includes financial sector debt, the financial sector debt is over four times your GDP here. And as Morgan Stanley in their chart notes, that's essentially government debt, because if these when these bets go bad, the debts go bad, the UK taxpayer will have to assume the liability.
Right. Well, this is what Cameron's playing for when he's over in the, having this European summit about the euro and the breakup of the euro. As it breaks up, it means that the balance sheet of the UK banks break up, which means the government's going to have to assume 300 to 400% of its GDP back into its balance sheet. And it's a similar indebtedness as Iceland before Iceland collapsed and Krona collapsed.
Well, that will be interesting. At least, one thing that did happen when the Krona collapsed was that a lot of the Icelandic population actually had their mortgages in British pounds or euros. So when the currency collapsed, they still continued to owe money. So if your currency collapses by 80%, then your mortgage payments go up by that much. So at least most British people have British pound-based, sterling-based mortgages.
Yeah, that's true. But overall, it does. This is what Cameron is trying to whether he knows it or not. I doubt he even understands the relationship between the debts on the British bank's balance sheet and how it interlocks with the European economy. He doesn't seem very bright to me.
No. Well, he doesn't seem very bright, period. But I guess, what do you find him compared to Blair? You were talking earlier about that. I find him a little bit less offensive than Blair, just because I guess maybe I lived in London during the Blair years, and he was like those cult members of Fox News sort. The more you pointed out all the crimes he was committing, the more fervent and passionate and articulate and inspiring he became.
Yeah, that's well, he, I don't watch him as closely because he's not that interesting. But so that makes him not only a kleptocrat, but boring. So he's committing two sins.
Hey, where's this?
Why is this all closed, or is that just...
Do we have to go down the other end?
It might not be locked, just closed, or it might be able to push
it. No. Oh, it's down here. Oh, it's just a French thing, you know. They just lock off gates sometimes for no apparent reason, probably because somebody was having their lunch and were angry to have to continue to open it for somebody. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where are we going?
We're going towards home, honey.
Isn't it that way?
Yeah, we can walk this way if you prefer. You know, that way walks through more of a park. It's up to you. Okay?
All right.
Okay. So we have just a few more minutes left here. We're reporting from a park in Paris where it's been kind of warm so far. It's good, isn't it, for this for those of us already at the midway point of our lives. This global warming thing is really good.
Yeah, I lived in a bubble, actually. You know, like I think about when I was in high school and I didn't really want to learn all the mathematics required to pass science classes, and lo and behold, they came up with the calculator, which everybody got, so they didn't have to do that. Then when I got out of college, I really didn't want to work for a living. Lo and behold, the bull markets on Wall Street started, and I took advantage of that. Then in the mid-1990s, when I ran out of my money that I had made as a stockbroker after living in Paris for 5 years having a party, they invented the internet, and I made a bunch of money on the Hollywood Stock Exchange. Then, now, when I'm ready to retire and I'm looking for a sunny place to retire, thanks to global warming, there's going to be a lot more sunny places to retire to. But everyone coming after me, though, they can go to hell.
Max, that's not very nice at all. Well, that's right, but you're going to have to make sure it's above sea level, of course, or at least have like a functioning, operating, culture and system, like, say, the Netherlands, which has those extremely high-tech, massive water barriers. That was one of the best things I ever saw from on that documentary that Spike Lee made about the New Orleans.
Yeah.
And he showed the levees down in New Orleans, and this is like a pile of mud, right?
Yeah, right.
And then he compared it, then he went to Amsterdam and showed the levees out there, and they're like mammoth, high-tech, like all computerized and technical, and it's just amazing the difference.
Yeah, speaking of technology, I see the Voyager spacecraft, which I think they launched in the 1970s, has just exited the solar system and has now entered the greater Milky Way.
Well, heading towards the Milky Way, I guess.
Well, we are in the Milky Way. System, you're in the Milky Way, you know, proper. So you're out of the local neighborhood of the solar system. So it's past the asteroid belt of Pluto or whatever, and it's now out there into the big Milky Way.
Well, how about, isn't it going through the asteroid belt then first? And is that going to be a dangerous thing?
It's past all that stuff. So now it's out there, it's past the solar system, it's in the Milky Way. So presumably if human species becomes extinct, as it probably will in the next 50 years, this little, you know, tin can will be floating out there for millions of years. It might bump into some intelligent species somewhere, and they'll wonder where it came from, and then they'll track it back to Earth, and they'll be like, oh, climate change denial, not that again.
Well, what's his name? Stephen Hawking did say that we shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be sending out these satellites going to look for intelligent life. We should be as quiet as possible and send out no radio waves, because anybody who finds us is not going to have good intentions. They're in fact going to be a lot like us, and they'll want to just go and destroy and take what the other, you know, planet has.
Yeah, well, gold is rare throughout the universe, and this is the plot of Cowboys and Aliens, isn't it?
Yeah.
The aliens come to take our gold. It makes sense.
I saw you liked that film. Well, anyway, should we wrap it up now?
You tell me. You're the one watching the timer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Why do you say your words twice? Do you have like some stutter?
No. I just figured that it's twice as nice.
Hey, you know, I'm working on editing the film for Max Kaiser's Stand Up Rage Tour 2011-2012. I'm looking at the London leg of the tour, and we've got some fantastic footage, but we're still waiting to close the funding on that. We're only, what, $500 away from completing funding, so if you want, go to piratemyfilm.com, and it's listed as Hotspots London, so make sure you don't miss your opportunity to participate in what will one day be that legendary moment. It was a legendary moment, but it just doesn't know it yet.
Well, I mean, it could get a million views ultimately, because it could be a very interesting historical document. So that means every $5 shareholder could be in line to get, you know, $15 or $20 back.
That's right. So, well, we've retraced our steps. We did a little bit of a different journey, went through a different park, and now it's time to say, until next Saturday, this has been Max and Stacy with The Truth About Markets.
Bye, y'all.